This is called the dark night of the soul. The dark night descends on a soul only when all other things have failed. When you are no longer the best meditator in the class because your meditation produces absolutely nothing. When prayer evaporates on your tongue and you have nothing left to say to God. When you're not even tempted to return to a life of worldly pleasure because the world has proven empty. And yet taking another step through the void of the spiritual life feels futile because you're no good at it. And it seems as if God has given up on you. You can scarcely conjure up your old passion for Him. It has become clear that you're unable to do anything on your own to remedy your spiritual brokenness. 2 minute meditation. Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend. The big book, alcoholism, addiction, good steps, myself, and especially you, God. So I may have a long time to experience that I don't see the truth. Amen.
I want to touch on these defects of character. Briefly, this reading about the dark night of the soul descending on a soul when all other things have failed, usually for me in my 10 years when this has happened, it's been tied to defects of character that have come to the surface, I believe, because my spirit knows it's time to deal with these things that are shortcomings, and now I'm ready to face them, and I have to have an experience with them. And there's an immense amount of mercy and grace that's rooted in these defects, because they for me, they send me deeper into the work. They create some of the most sincere prayer life that I've ever experienced, has been behind the self-imposed crisis that is generated behind these defects becoming active. And I'll be honest with you, the defects that were created, like cheating and stealing and pawning, the stuff attached to addiction that progressed as my addiction got worse, those were completely cast out. once I entered the recovery process. But then there were other things about my character that were around before the drugs and the alcohol became a serious problem. And they began to work on me, and some of those were cast out in the first few years. And now it seems like I have a set of challenges or defects of character or shortcomings that seem to emerge in my life and begin to cause some serious friction and burning in my life. I don't look at these as things that are indicating that I am not in fit spiritual condition, because I promise each one of you in here that if you get active in this program and you stay active, you're still going to do some goofy and some insane things. The behavior may require some attention. But on some level, if you're turning to God after the goofy behavior shows up, and it leads to sincerity, and it leads to transparent dialogue with other people that have had similar struggles, so you can sort of compare notes, or you have a teacher or a guide or a sponsor that can help move you through the process because he's had the same challenges before, there's a meaning behind that experience. And so there's a gratitude that I have for my defects, because they literally sit me back down at the table with God on a regular basis. And that's why I said at the beginning that there's a mercy and grace in these defects of character. I think the path that I follow, the struggles that I go through are very sacred. They're sacred because for whatever reason in my experience, they keep drawing me closer to my Creator. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit tonight, but I wanted to read this because the spiritual path is not about unicorns and rainbows. You know, there are some that believe the path to God or the path to spiritual awakening is through love, and I believe that too. But I'm also a guy that believes that the spiritual path is one of struggle, because the struggle is what changes us. It's what refines our character. And so these are the concepts that I work with as I rub up against my limitations as a human being. I am limited. I'm going to struggle. And the most powerful thing for me is to share my struggles with other men. Some of those look at me as a teacher. Some of those look at me as a peer. And some of those look at me as a student. But I'm willing to be transparent about the way my defects of character are showing up. And that's the key for me. So as we conclude the self-examination with step 6, we turn to God in step 7. And I said, God, I humbly come to you. I cannot do anything to change my character. Here's a 7-step prayer that I wrote a while back. God, please change me once again. Please remove anything that stands in my way of being useful to you. Please grant strength, willingness, and the capacity to help your children. Please refine my character so I may have a deeper, more meaningful experience with you. Please help me know my qualities and spirit are one with you. There is no God but God. So that's the prayer I worked with. Sometimes the defects go into remission and come back. Sometimes they're completely cast out, and sometimes they're just there. And there are certain defects that have been with me the whole time. And like Brandon said, they've been converted from blameworthy to praiseworthy. Whereas at one point in my life, operating from a place of delivering a message or wanting to be at the center, at the head, and having people look at me would create a lot of animosity with who I was talking to. Now I'm effective. You know, somebody here this weekend is going to hear something that's going to change the way they're going. I promise you. Maybe just one person. That's why we were here. We may be planting some seeds right now that don't even sprout for another 2 or 3 years. We've had this happen to us. We have guys that will come up to us, and you know, I had this happen to me last month. I'm speaking at a random meeting in Metro Atlanta, and a guy comes up to me that had sat in one of our workshops. And he told, you know, he was very grateful and described the impact that our message had on him, and that made the whole workshop worthwhile for me. And that's why we do these things. And so as we move away from turning to God, now we have to turn back to others. We have to reconnect. And that's what the eighth step is about. So let's turn to page 78. Or I'm sorry, 76. You want to add anything? Now we need more action, without which we find faith without works is dead. So faith without action is dead, especially for the addicts and the alcoholics. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed, so they're assuming that we've harmed everyone in our resentment inventory, and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live life on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol and or drugs. So again, in the short form of the steps, alcohol and drugs are only mentioned in the first half of the first step. But in the long form of the steps, they just... It says, remember, you agreed at the beginning you would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol and drugs. And they're connecting it. They're connecting that to the willingness that we have to make these amends. So, let's go to the top of 77. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's our purpose. Turn to page 79. First full paragraph, three lines down. Here we go again. Reminding ourselves that we decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. Page 80. Third full paragraph. Four lines down. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking or using again. Page 82. Last paragraph, four lines down. Or actually, I want to read the whole paragraph. The addict and the alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits, not drugs and alcohol, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. And we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety or being clean is enough. He's like the farmer who came out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarks, "Don't see anything the matter up here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stop blowing?" Sometimes I wish when I listen to Fifth Steps, like when they're done, I'd like to have a video recorded from the Weather Channel after a series of tornadoes just destroying an entire town, and then push play so the guy that just read his Fifth Step to me can see what a tornado truly does going into 6, 7, 8, and 9. Because that's what we do. We destroy everything that we come into contact with when we're in the grips of our addiction. And then we have a couple of months or 3 months clean and sober, and everybody should treat us like we're on top of the world.
I have this guy sponsoring. He's from up near Boston, and this happened earlier. He was 91 or 92 days sober, and he was complaining that his wife wasn't giving him credit for the 91 or 92 days sober he had. And maybe you guys recall, maybe you have no idea. I don't know what kind of access you have to the outside, but in the first game of the season, the Patriots got pummeled by the Chiefs. Chiefs beat them pretty handily. And so I said to this guy, I'm like, he's bitching about his wife. I said, man, the Patriots are done. They're terrible. And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, Kansas City worked them in that first game. They're over. Tom Brady should just retire. He's like, what are you talking about? They won the Super Bowl last year. I'm like, yeah, but they're done. They're so done. They got killed by the Chiefs. He's like, they've won 5 Super Bowls over the last X number of years. And I'm like, doesn't matter. They're done. He's like, how could you even say that? And I said, so you've been sober 91, 92 days. And you've turned over this new leaf. How were you before that? I wasn't very good. Okay. And before that? Yeah, I wasn't very good. And before that? I wasn't very good. I'm like, okay, so you've been married for 30 years, and for 92 days, you've been good. So we should disregard everything that's happened prior to this point and just assume that your wife's going to give you credit for being good? Like, Patriots lose one game, you can't say that they're done and they're terrible, because you have to look at the track record. So when we return home and we want our families to worship the fact that I just blessed out after 6 months of Bridges of Hope and I'm doing great, why aren't you cutting me some slack? How long have you been ripping and roaring? How long have you been on this ride? Ooh, 6 months. What about all the other shit?
My first sponsor used to tell me, so my mom, for the first 5 years of my recovery, would contact me every day to see how I was doing. Because remember, I robbed her of emotional security for years because I would disappear. She wouldn't hear from me. She wouldn't even know what was going on with me, if I was alive, if I was dead. She just wouldn't know. And so she would call me. She would send me these text messages that just said, call me. So I thought something was a matter. And I would call her and say, hey, what's going on? She goes, oh, I just want to see how you're doing. And I would become resentful. And I'd call my sponsor and say, man, my mom's driving me crazy. And he would say, Tarek, how long did you terrorize your mom? And I used to love it. That's how he would say it. Terrorize. How long did you terrorize your mom? And I'd tell him, shit, 10 years. He goes, so if you walk into the dark forest 20 miles, can you turn around and just be outside the forest? I'm like, no. So you got to turn around and walk out. It's going to take a lot of time to cover that ground. And it's directly related to this next paragraph. Page 83. Yet there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that you're sorry and you're clean and sober today won't fit the bill.
I'm sorry.
We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that your own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that the Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than anything that we say. The way we live our life makes so much noise, there's not much that we really need to say. That's all these people take. The people that were closest to us, that we hurt the most, we've spent the most time with, all they want to see is clean time, sober time, and change in behavior. They don't really care what we're saying. And that's part of why the long period of reconstruction lies ahead, along with how long your amends list is, which I'm going to get into here in a second. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. We can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen, so we send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And so, when I first got clean and sober, I had my first list had about 150 people in institutions on it. And then over the course of the first 4 or 5 years, that list increased to 230. It took me 8.5 years to approach everyone that I'm consciously aware that I owe an amends to. I've approached with a willingness to make the amends, all those people. I can walk down any street on this planet, and there's not another human on this planet that could be walking towards me and make me cross the street because I don't want them to see me. I've paid back almost, I'd say, in the ballpark of $17,000. I've still got more money to pay back. Now, of those 230, I don't know what the number is, but I'd probably say somewhere between 35, 45, 50 didn't want to see me. But I reached out and I tried to schedule an appointment to see them face to face, and they know that I am willing to sit down and make that amends. How free do you want to be? You see, there's this little line that we work with in the big book. It says God is everything or else he's nothing. That's a fucking concept until you're out there really making amends. And the miracle of step 6 and 7 a lot of times is experience in the actions of steps 8 and 9. My sponsor held my hand for those first 8 steps. When I went to make my amends, did my sponsor go with me? It was just me and God. Some prayer and some meditation before I make the amends. How free do you want to be? So we have a system and a process for making amends. A lot of people have a lot of amends, and so that it looks very daunting when you make the list. When I first got clean and sober, I had 4 lists. The ones I would do right now, the ones I would do later, the ones I might do, and the ones I would never do. And my sponsor said, I want you to put the other 3 up. All I want you to work on right now is the ones you're going to do right now. And I tried to do as many of those as I can, and some of them I got done, and some of them I didn't. And then I went over to the list of later, and I started working on that. And then a lot of the ones that were on the might list, I started moving over to the right now list because I became willing. And then before you knew it, some of the amends on the never list started moving over to the maybe list and then the later list. And so I've done this for 8.5 years. About 9 or 10 months ago, I made the last approach. So, what we do now is a note card system. You see this note card? So the guys, when I sponsor them, they get a note card. And every amends they have, this is the example out of the big book. Mr. Brown, you put your contact information and the nature of the harms. I stole from him. I assassinated his character. I broke several commitments. It's short and to the point. And then when I make an amends, there's 3 questions that I ask. Is there something else I left out? Do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? And that's, I think, the most important question to ask. Because you just gave them a green light to unload. And you get to look in someone's eyes. And you get to see in living color what your selfishness and your self-centeredness does to other people. And then when that's all said and done and they said their piece, you ask, what can I do to make things right? And so I made amends like this, and then I did the plus-minus system. You see how this one has a plus and a minus? That means I'm willing to make it, but I don't know where they are. I don't know how to find them. If it said minus-plus, that means I'm not willing to make it, but I do know how to find them. Minus-minus is I don't know, I'm not willing, and I don't know how to find them. And plus-plus is I'm willing, and I know how to find them. So when I take guys through the steps, they put all the note cards up, and all they work on is plus-plus. I want them to get into the action of making amends as quickly as possible. I've seen people over the years, they have this massive stack of making amends, and there's like 4 or 5 of them that are just massive. Like, they're big deal amends. And they're so fearful that it sort of stifles their action moving forward. They're constantly thinking about it. And so I'm like, just say you're not willing to make that one. Put it in that stack. Let's move on. Let's make other amends. The action of making amends. So as of next Sunday, I've been clean and sober 120 months. Out of those 120 months, somewhere in the ballpark of 90, I have sent a financial amends out into the universe. I've made a payment. And that's ranged anywhere from $25 to, I think, my biggest payment in 1 month was like $400. Okay? I'm telling you, there's a direct connection between my success personally and professionally. It's all connected. I keep throwing back into the universe because I've taken out so much, and the law of circulation starts working, and now stuff's coming back at me. More stuff's coming at me, I don't even know what to do with it.
Having trouble with relationships with females, you make amends with females, you get better relationships with females. Having trouble finding work, make amends with previous employers, you find work. Having trouble with money, you pay back money, you get money.
So the big book lays out... Oh, yes, sir.
What was the middle question, the second question you had?
Do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? No.
It seems... Amends always seem really scary when you're in the first couple steps, because it's like you're looking at it from your current mind. Mm-hmm. Once you've done 4, 5, 6, 7, you have a new mind. Your mind's been cleaned, so the willingness shows up. And I'll tell you, here's the craziest thing, guys. Is you get free of the amend before you even do the amend. When you make the decision that I'm going to make this amend, the weight magically gets lifted from you. So really all you have to do then is to show up across from the person and go through the process. Now, an amend is not complete until the question, the third question is satisfied. Stole $10,000 from a guy. What can I do to make things right? He looks at you and he just goes, I just want my fucking money. Is the amend done? No. The approach is done.
Mm-hmm.
When I cut him that last penny of the $10,000 I owe him, then the amend is done. We hear all these people saying, well, I made my amend. Here's how not to make an amend. I had a guy who he was sponsored by one of the guys that's a buddy of mine. And I'm at a meeting one night, and this guy, I think he called me, and he goes, hey, man, I just want to let you know that I had a really big resentment against you, and I need to make an amend to you. So, and he starts talking. I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm making my amend. I'm like, I don't know what your sponsor told you, but like, amends are supposed to be made face to face whenever possible. We live in the same town, dude. So I'm at the Monday night meeting one time. This dude walks up to me and he goes, so yeah, man, sorry for thinking I was... sorry that I thought you were an asshole for so long. And then he walks away, and it like took me a minute, and I'm like, was that an amend? So first of all, I didn't even know the guy thought I was an asshole. So he's now created harm in me because I'm like, why did he think I was an asshole? He didn't ask me any of those questions. So I don't... maybe there was something else that he did, but he'll never know. I'm not clean of it. And he didn't ever say, how do I make it right? He just said, I'm sorry for thinking you are an asshole. Does that sound self-centered or... Yeah. So the approach... the person that you're making an amend to, if they don't know that you're making an amend to them, it's not an amend. It's got to be real clear when they're done, are the books clean? Is there no separation between us anymore? If it's not clear, it's not done. And I'll tell you, the worst thing to do is to not make the loop closed on an amend, because you may think it's done, the universe knows it is not. And if you owe somebody money and you didn't pay them money back, it's going to come out of you somewhere else. Always does.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Somebody, who is somebody? Who's your older drug dealer some money?
I'm about to get to it, brother.
That I was scared of, but that helped me the most was that part about leave anything out. In my personal experience, I was a bad blackout drinker. So my worst nightmare was waking up and not remembering what the hell I'd done. And I mean, I can remember calling family members and they knew what was up, because the first thing I always say was, what's wrong? I didn't have a clue what the hell I was doing. And I had a minute to make with my daughter. I got sent off. I actually had custody of her. She was living with me. And I got sent down the road a week after she had made captain of the competition cheerleading team. And she had to move to go live with family members. And that was what I thought my biggest hurt to her at the time was. And when I asked her, was there anything else? And she had forgotten all about that. There was a time that she came through the house and was going out with some friends that I was shit-faced and told her she looked like a whore because I didn't like what she wore. That hurt her more, and I had no clue about it.
Amen, brother.
That's why we asked that question. That's a perfect example of why we asked that question. You know, apology is like a polite gesture that sometimes includes the admission of guilt, but it's just, you want to clear the ground a bit so you can just keep moving forward. Oh, I'm sorry, man. Let's just keep moving forward. An amends is a full-on restitution to recompense. I can't ever say that word. To compensate others for the harm that we've caused. Maybe that's a way to put it. Okay?
To make whole.
To make someone
to amend,
whole.
To fix.
I like that. So the book lays out what happens when we... It gives you an example or instructions around someone we hate, about business partners, about divorce, about alimony, about creditors, when we're facing jail time, and people we can't see. It lists out instructions around those areas. So there were, I'd say, about 25 females that I had harmed. I didn't know their name. It was like girl at this bar, girl at this place, first name. But I remembered the harm I caused, so I wrote all the letters. And then I found a woman in the program, and I went and sat with her. I read all of those letters to her. It was a very powerful experience and a very humbling experience to sit across from a female and read these letters about things I had done to other females that I didn't even know their name. Another amends that was very powerful for me was I slept with my best friend's fiance. Okay? And I devastated an entire group of friends. Devastated. And so when I got clean and sober and I'm making these amends, I'm having to go through all of the circle, the entire circle of friends. I've got to go make amends to all of them because some of them were forced to take sides. A lot of people that used to hang out together were having trouble hanging out together because of the rift between everybody. And so I went and made amends to her, and then I made amends to him. And I remember while we were out eating lunch, and I asked him, you know, do you want to talk about any of this? And I'm talking, he unloaded on me and the tears. And it was just a very emotional experience. And then we started to rebuild our relationship. And he gave me a gift. It was a pendant that was wrapped because he loved me. And in 2010, I had to go to this retreat. It was a 12-step big book experience. And the facilitator wanted everyone to bring something that had some significant meaning for them. And the first night at the retreat on Friday night, we all had to get up in front and talk about why we brought this artifact. And I had brought that pendant, and I told the story about making amends. And a lot of us, we live in a society and a culture that says if you sleep with your best friend's girl, that relationship's probably over. And it wasn't over. When I was sleeping with my best friend's fiance, we used to meet in secret at an apartment for some friends that she was house sitting for. Evidently, I took this. They were part of the friends that I was making amends with, so I took them out to dinner to make the amends. Now this happened in 2003. I'm making this amends in 2008, so 5 years. In 2003, this married couple found a used condom in their bedroom.
Oh, man.
And for 5 years, they both didn't know where the condom had come from, and they both questioned the fidelity of the other person. And so I got there to make amends for just creating some turmoil and some drama in their lives, and they finally got closure on where the used condom had come from. What if I'd not become willing to make that amends? Yeah. So, one of the companies I used to work for, my buddy Andy got me the job, and I got fired from that job. And so I went to the CEO of the company, and I met him for lunch, and I took him out to lunch, and I made the amends. And when I asked him what I could do to make things right, he told me his son, Andy, who I used to be friends with, was really bad off, still bad off on meth. He goes, "Will you talk to my son?" And that's how I got to make that amends right. There was another individual that I made amends to who I hated. I absolutely hated this guy. We both used to sell drugs, and we didn't like each other. Every now and then we'd hang out together, but he didn't like some of my friends, and then if they were with me, we weren't allowed to come to his house, so we just trashed each other. I'd been sober for a while. I run into him at a concert, and you could just feel the animosity, right? And he was on my list, but I just hadn't gotten around to him. For some reason, the experience of seeing him at the concert, I said, I need to schedule an amends with him. I took him out to lunch, and I made the amends to him, and then he made an amends to me. It doesn't always play out like that.
Rarely.
And the next time I saw him, it was like years, like a force field was lifted. And every time I've seen him since then, it's like that. He gives me a big hug just from sitting down and taking ownership of what I had done. And then I had a guy who gave me 1,000 pills of ecstasy on the cuff. So I had a lot of friends that used to try to help me out. They would give me drugs to sell. I'd get pounds of marijuana, ounces and ounces of cocaine. And I would do the rob Peter to pay Paul thing, right? And this one time, this guy, my buddy, he was the drug dealers that I paid back were all ones that were actually people I broke bread with that I hung out with. Now, when the guys I ripped off down on the corner, I just donated money to the homeless shelter, the Atlanta Union Mission. Okay, I came up with a number, I donated the money. But with this guy, on Monday or Tuesday, I'm going to pay him back his last $200. I've been paying that amends since July of 2013. And this week, coming up, I have $200 I have to pay him, and I am done. You know, the interesting thing, and I was real scared to go to this guy and make amends for the first 6 years of my recovery. He ran into a friend of mine at a bar, and this was an early recovery. He said, "If I see Tarek, I'm going to put him in the ground." And so I stayed away. He was on my never list. But then it just started to work on me, and I became willing. And when I went and approached him to make the amends, he told me if I'd come any sooner, it probably wouldn't have ended well. But for whatever reason, he allowed me to make this amends, and I'm about to make it completely right. I paid him some money last month, and I was at his house, and he's thinking of starting some charitable organization. And he sat down and asked me for advice because he knows I run a recovery center, and you know, he assumed that it was a nonprofit, so he had all these questions. You know, I couldn't really help him, but the fact is he came to me and asked me the questions. This is the power of amends. This is what amends can do. I've made amends to all my ex-girlfriends. Some sponsors say don't make amends to ex-girlfriends. The Big Book says we make direct amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We're not others. Okay, we make the amends. We take the bit in the teeth. Now, I can sit here and tell you some more stories, but Brandon's got some stories he wants to tell. Oh, go ahead.
what you just saying that about making men where possible, except for when to do so against them or others, how were you able to make men to your best friend and your other without doing harm to either one of them?
They knew what it did.
They knew what had happened. It wasn't like I was giving them new information that was going to hurt them. I reached out to them. I said, I've been going back through my life trying to repair all the damage I've caused. It's quite clear that I've harmed you. Would you be willing to sit down and let me make things right with you? And then I wait for them to get back in touch with me. That's on the back of this card, you keep an activity log. So, let's say I have a card and I contact them on October 28, 2017. I leave a voicemail and I write that on the back of the card and I don't try to contact them again for a month or two. And then I try to contact them again. I usually worked off the three strike rule. If I try to contact someone three times and they do not respond, I've made my amends. It's not complete, but I made approaches. It's done. They know I'm willing to make the amends. And so I've got one thing that the guys struggle with. I got these guys that'll pull out. I'll say, how many approaches have you made? They'll say two or three. I was like, do you understand this is like sales? It's the law of numbers. If you sit down and set aside an hour one week, take out 15 note cards and send an approach letter or leave a phone, a voicemail or send an email or contact them on Facebook. You don't make the amends on Facebook. You contact people that you cannot find. Out of those 15 people, you might set three appointments. You might set three appointments to actually make an amends. But what I watch people do is they just start doing two or three at a time. Oh, I'll leave it alone for two or three weeks. I mean, I ran out of the gates and I made close to probably 75 amends in my first 9 months of making amends. And then I stalled out for another 6 or 7 months. Then I picked back up and I was consistently making amends from there on out. There is a process and a system to this, but this is the most important step, in my opinion, when it comes to beginning to go from the willingness to the decisions to the results. And then you get some faith, and you make some more decisions, and you take some more action, and that faith begins to turn into trust because you watch situations like my best friend and I rebuilding our relationship. And I got one more. I walked in on my ex-girlfriend cheating on me.
Ooh.
Okay? Walked in on it. I stalked her all night. I found out she was at the bartender's house or apartment where she worked. And I knew I had a feeling she was cheating on me. I sat out there all night long. Before the sun comes up, I go to Kroger. I get this rose and I put it on her car and I go park across the street. And she comes out of there, I don't know, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and she freaks out because she sees the rose on her windshield. So she knows that I know, right? And she goes back into this house, and I bust the door down. And I catch her with him. And I say some really fucked up shit, and I get, I don't get fist angry, but I get pushy angry, right, and violent. And then I proceeded to try to destroy this guy, having his friends turn their back on him, people that were selling him pot. I was like, you can't sell him pot anymore, all this stuff, just assassinate his character. So I get clean and sober, and he's on my amends list. And it's probably 3-4 years into my recovery. I've made amends to her. I'm driving down this road in Atlanta near the restaurant, and I get this, my consciousness says it's time to make amends to Tony. I'm like, fuck that. And I keep driving. It's time to make amends to Tony, right? And it's funny how the mind works, right? The egoic mind says to me, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He's a bartender. There's no way he's sitting behind the bar. Let me go in here and see if he's working. Of course, I walk into the restaurant, and he's behind the bar. And it's the middle of the day, so there's really nobody in this place. So I said, can I get a few minutes? And we sat down at this booth, and I made amends to him. And he broke down and started crying. And he made amends to me. Fast forward, about a year and a half ago, I'm with one of my grand sponsees, a guy I used to sponsor. We go to lunch, and he's my employee at this time. We walk into the same restaurant, and me and this guy make eye contact, and we hug, and we start catching up and shooting the shit like we're boys, right? I sit down at the table to eat with my employee, and I tell him the story, and he's like, holy shit, you guys acted like you've been boys your entire life. I said, yeah, that's the power of making amends. So, I have little patience when it comes to guys that have all these excuses for not wanting to make amends. I really do. It's a long period of reconstruction. How free do you want to be? You have to use your sponsors. You don't go out making amends without consulting people.
Please consult your sponsor first.
All right, sorry.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
What if there's TPOs involved?
What's TPOs?
Protection order.
Yeah.
Yeah, restraining order.
We're not attorneys.
Yeah. Don't violate it.
But you still need to make that amend. You need to figure out how to make it, but I would have that contact through an attorney.
Yeah. Yeah, sending a letter may not be a violation of a restraining order.
It would be?
Yeah.
That's right. My drinking and using isn't hurting anybody. We had one more over there.
You need to consult an attorney.
Yeah, I know you said something about it yesterday. What's your point of view on like living amends?
Can you show me in the book where it says living amends?
No.
Okay. It doesn't exist in the big book. Okay. So. The big book is kind of a bullshit sifter. Everything that you hear in a meeting, everything you hear from either one of us, if you can't back it up with something that's in this big book, it's wrong. Every time. The program is very clear. Living amends are not amends. Okay? Let me give some examples of some times and meetings where I've heard people talking about living amends. It usually has to do something like this. Well, he harmed me worse than I harmed him, so my living amends is I'm not going to act that way to anybody else. Okay? Now, if you're familiar with the steps, there's this third part of the 12th step that says, and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. If I'm practicing the principles in all my affairs, that to me covers the fact that I'm not acting that way to other people. Okay? The 12th step has 5 chapters. 4 of them are devoted to practicing the principles in all of my affairs. Our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. Our homes would be the family afterward, 2 wives. Occupations would be 2 employers. And affairs is a vision for you. There's chapters devoted to that to explain the wreckage that we cause in the life of our homes, occupations, and affairs, and how to work through that. Now, I've also heard people say that my amends to her is that I'm supposed to never see her again. Who decided that? Did she decide that? Or did you decide that? Because best I can tell, the way that this book is, it's up to the other person. If she doesn't want to ever see you again, let her choose that. If she doesn't want you to make things right with her, let her choose that. If I'm choosing to not make an amend because I think it's going to save the other person from harm, I'm still acting selfish. Okay? The book is real clear. The 8th step says, made direct amends to all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Said the word all twice. Does anybody know what all means?
All, everything.
Yeah, all. Right? So, I don't choose who I make amends to. They choose. The book, we didn't go through all of them, but the book's real clear. It gives you examples of how to handle domestic troubles. It tells you how to handle if you may face jail, criminal offenses, owing money, the man you hated. It says on page 79, we may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. Okay? There are. I'll get you in a second there, bud. I don't want your arm to get too tired. Hold on, I'm not done yet. I'm still on my rant about So there are no lectures that endure except for when Brandon wants to give you a lecture. On page 83, the second from, or the last full paragraph, it says there may be some wrongs that we can never fully make right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. I don't know of a situation where we really can't make them, unless it's something like Tarek talked about, where the women, he can't find them, or if a person's dead. If a person's dead, there's a way to make those amends. You go to the graveside, something will happen. You go to the graveside, you make an amend to the person, they will visit you in a way that's maybe not in front of you, but you'll know that they know what you're talking about. Okay? I know this from experience and listening to other people. Some people cannot be seen, we send them an honest letter. And there may be some valid reasons for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Now, people misunderstand what that's saying. What they say is, that guy harmed me, and I'm not going to be servile or scraping in front of anybody. I don't crawl before anyone. That's not what that means. What that means is that when I go to make an amend to you, I don't come to you and go, I'm so sorry for what I've done. That's crawling. If I come to you and say, look, I harmed you, I need to make it right, and I treat you like a man and expect to be treated like a man, that's not crawling in front of anybody. That doesn't say that I don't make the amend. It just says that I don't crawl. So there's the living amend thing that has creeped into the room. There's also the thing of I'm others and harming myself, or you know, others, myself is included in that. That's wrong. That's trying to twist the language in the book to try to make it easier on myself. The book says over and over again that we're to be hard on ourselves and always considerate of others. We saw that we had to place the outcome in God's hands, or we'd soon start drinking again and all would be lost. So the book's real clear, this idea of this living amend. That's practicing the principles in all my affairs. If I've harmed you, I need to make it right. And if you don't make it right, spirit world knows. And you'll continue to get punished for it, either internally or externally. It's up to you. Do you want to be free or not? How free do you want to be?
You good?
Did I answer your question? Okay. So, and because that just felt like it was kind of a segue into this. You must forgive anyone who has ever hurt you if you want to be forgiven yourself. That is the long and the short of it. You have to get rid of all resentment and condemnation of others, and not least, self-condemnation and remorse. You have to forgive yourself, but you cannot forgive yourself sincerely until you have forgiven others first. There are few people in this world who have not at some time or another been hurt, really hurt by someone else, or been disappointed or injured or deceived or misled. Such things sink into the memory, where they usually cause inflamed and festering wounds. And there is only one remedy. They have to be plucked out and thrown away. And there is only one way to do that, and that is by forgiveness. See if this hits you between the eyes. If your prayers are not being answered, search your consciousness and see if there is someone who you have yet to forgive. Find out if there is not some old thing about which you are very resentful. Search and see if you are not really holding a grudge. It may be camouflaged in some self-righteous way against some individual or some body of people, a nation, a race, a social class, some religious movement of which you disapprove, perhaps, a political party or whatnot. If you are doing so, then you have an act of forgiveness to perform. And when this is done, you will probably make your demonstration. is a cosmic truth that it takes two to make a prisoner, the prisoner and the jailer. So when you hold a resentment against anyone, you are bound to the person by a cosmic link, a real tough chain. You are tied by a cosmic tie to the thing that you hate. The one person perhaps in the world whom you most dislike is the very one whom you are attracting to yourself by a hook that is stronger than steel. I have experience with making amends to the man I hated. I had a boss that I didn't really care for the way that he talked to me. Now, I wanted to forget all of the reasons why he talked to me the way that he talked to me. But, you know, I mean, only just like holding $1.5 million of our greatest customer that is responsible for the success of a project or not, that I just was basically fucking with the guy's money. And my boss came in and said, "Why are you fucking with the guy's money? I should fire you for fucking with our best customer's money." Well, I took offense to that. I didn't want to be fired. Okay? There were all sorts of things where, as my drinking was escalating, I was doing things at this job where this guy was getting more and more frustrated with me and expressing more and more displeasure with how I was working for his company. And I didn't care for the way that he talked to me. It was so bad that when I heard this guy's voice or name, I was sitting in my office and another guy was walking through my office and he said this guy's name and I just got hot, sweaty, hate that guy. And then the universe is kind of funny the way that it works is that a couple days later I was working on a certain spreadsheet and I asked myself the question, why do I always include this in this spreadsheet? It's like, oh yeah, Bill taught me that. I was working on something the next day. I'm like, why do I do that? Oh yeah, Bill taught me that. I had enough of those occurrences where I started going, what else did Bill teach me? And what I realized is that I worked for this man for 7 years and he gave me about 20 years experience in the 7 years I worked for him and vaulted my career to a place where I was at a position much higher than other people my age. I hadn't made the amend yet. I felt justified by the way that he treated me to not make that amend. I go and make amend to this guy, sit down, explain, do the questions. Not shitting you, like a week after making the amend, the same guy that mentioned his name walking through the office says it again, and what comes over me is this: thank you, Bill. Thank you for all you taught me. What changed? I changed. He didn't change. I finally was able to look at our relationship from a true perspective, realizing that it was not him doing this to me, it was me doing this to me, and he was reacting to it. If you would have asked me, if I would have followed the rules of most of the people I hear in the rooms of AA and CA, I would have not made that amend because I felt justified for doing what I did. And I wouldn't be free. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I got free. So, I've got other stories, but there's also, we're at the cusp of so much really awesome shit that, so the promises. Does anybody know where the promises that we read in meetings are located in the big book? Okay. Can everybody with me real quick turn back to page 76? In the third paragraph, you see the italicized numbers written out there? It says steps. Steps 8 and 9, okay. All right, can everybody turn to page 84? You see it says this thought brings us to, what does it say in italicized letters? Okay, so which promises are these? Right, because they fall in the ninth step in the book. You see how that's constructed, right? Let me see if you guys have ever heard the promises Night Set Promises read this way before. And let's see if they mean something different. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as a result of making our amends. We will not regret the past, nor will we wish to shut the door on it as a result of making our amends. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace as a result of making our amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others as a result of making our amends. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear as a result of making our amends. Why? Because I'm not hiding from people anymore. And I'm no longer thinking that all these people have done all this stuff to me. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows as a result of making our amends, because I realize that all the people that I thought were really assholes weren't really assholes. I was the asshole. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change as a result of making our amends. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us as a result of making our amends. You know why? Because we faced all the people that we owed money to and we paid them back. Huh. Weird how that works, huh? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves as a result of making our amends, because God had to protect us when we went back to go see those drug dealers, when we went to go to court, when we went to do all these things. When you call a police department and tell them that you want to pay for a ticket that you never paid for, or a parking company and tell them that you want to pay for a ticket that they wrote you, but they no longer handle the development that you got the ticket in, they have no idea how to deal with you guys. Because they're not used to people actually wanting to pay their money back. Are these extravagant promises? Hell fucking no, they're not. If you're making your amends. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, depending on how quickly or slowly you make your amends. They will always materialize if you work for them by making amends. Anybody ever looked at those promises that way before? Because that's what they really say. It's not when you're halfway through the steps do you get all these things. It's when you're halfway through your amends do these things start to show up in your life. As Tarek says, people want to work the promises and hope the steps come true. You want these things to come true, you have to be on this step in doing these things. They don't just magically appear. When you do them, magic happens all around you, all the time. It's fascinating.
You know, when guys come to me and they're struggling, one of the first questions out of my mouth, how many unfinished amends do you have? When was the last time you made an amends? Where are you with your first 8-step list? It's the first place I'm going. First place I'm going. Okay.
All right. Let's take a
12-minute
break. Come back at 8:15.